This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer, a Joy 94.9 podcast. This podcast was made possible with support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. To support the production of content like this, donate at cbf.com.au.
You may not read the Australian newspaper, not that many people do, but once played an important role as a paper of record. Its journalists broke important stories and its commentators shaped national political debate. But the glory days of the Australian are long gone. Circulation is down, it loses a substantial amount of money, and it's moved from the centre to, on some issues, the extremes of the right. The change has been so extreme that many journalists who once worked at the Australian have publicly raised the move to the right. The paper's social affairs writer, Rick Morton, earlier this year said that journalists at the newspaper were uncomfortable with the blatant political bias. Morton said they were more uncomfortable, certainly now, than at any time I've been there in the past 7 years. He also said there is a real mood that something has gone wrong. In a podcast posted online by UTS, people will tell you, he says, going back a decade, it used to be a very great paper, and in many ways it still is. But some of the craziness has been dialed up.
That's right. And Morton has actually recently, I believe, left The Australian to move to writing for other magazines like The Saturday Paper. But when it comes to LGBTIQ rights, The Australian is particularly vicious. It campaigned vigorously against safe schools and just recently introduced a gender section of the newspaper to focus on its ongoing campaign against the trans community. Author and journalist Benjamin Law wrote a quarterly essay on the Australian's campaign against safe schools, and he recently tweeted telling people who unsubscribed from The Australian that he'd donate $36 per unsubscription to the Gender Centre in Sydney, a very, very worthy cause. We spoke to Ben to find out what he thinks has gone so wrong at The Australian. So, Ben, you've launched a campaign encouraging people to unsubscribe from The Australian, which, given the quite virulent homophobia that regularly emerges from The Australian, is quite a laudable campaign. Can you tell us about what drove your decision to encourage people to unsubscribe?
Yeah, sure. Look, I should probably also state up front that I used to contribute to News Corp for many, many years. I was a columnist for the Courier Mail. I subscribed to The Australian. I've contributed to The Australian before as a reviewer. So it's not like I'm, you know, burning up my tiki torch and always raving on about News Corp. But I think things changed when I wrote my quarterly essay in 2017 looking at The Australian's coverage of the safe schools scandal. Well, basically, they manufactured the scandal over safe schools. And then beyond that, just this year when they've started a new vertical about gender issues, which is essentially a handy one-stop section where you can find all of their very, very lazy transphobic pieces, that's when I thought, look, something needs to be done. And so basically, I said on Twitter, anyone who unsubscribes from The Australian or gets a relative to unsubscribe, a workplace, a business to unsubscribe from The Australian, not just because of transphobia, but because of what I think constitutes really, really poor and dangerous journalism. If you do that, let me know and I'll donate $36, which is how much 1 month's worth of a subscription to the Oz costs. And I'll donate that to the Gender Centre in New South Wales, which is such an important resource for trans and gender variant people, including kids across the state.
You could be out of pocket quite a lot of money here, man. Like this could be a serious, you know, like this could burn a serious hole in your pocket. There is like obviously a serious side to that. Like you're probably of all the writers and activists in Australia, given that Safe Schools essay that you wrote, which was an excellent work of scholarship, probably dug into this subject more than most. What is it that you think is driving the transphobia that emerges from The Australian? Because it does seem like it's more than just garden variety bigotry, if you like. Is the sense that it's kind of clickbait attempting to engage their audience? Is there another agenda? Like, are there particular people within the paper who really drive it? Like, what's your take on where it's coming from?
Yeah, look, I've got a few theories. One is that after the same-sex marriage postal survey came back with a resounding yes, a lot of the people on the No campaign really felt burnt by that. And where they saw an opening was campaigning on transgender people and trans kids. Now, the other thing is they're doing that cynically, but they're also doing that genuinely. They just really don't believe that transgender people are either a thing or don't exist in the numbers that the research actually shows that they do. There's kind of a denial of the science because it doesn't fit within their worldview. And as, an understanding of transgender and gender-varying identities emerges, more and more young people are presenting for assistance, help and support. Now, we've seen this within the same-sex attracted community. As growing social acceptance emerges, more and more people are like, wow, where did all these gay people come from? It must be an epidemic. You know, we've seen that with same-sex attracted people before. And it's happening with transgender people too. And increasingly as, there's a bigger, broader, more open and respectful conversation about transgender people, the more we're starting to see transgender stories in the media, the more that we're starting to see transgender activists and role models, say, like Georgie Stone, who is about to star on Neighbours, has been Young Victorian of the Year, come out. When there's media coverage, well, there will be parents out there and there will be young people out there who are like, actually, that's me. And now I know what to do in order to be safe and to live my life wholly and completely. Then the conservatives see that and they really freak out because it doesn't align with their worldview. It doesn't align with the worldview that gender is apparently binary. And their anxiety and distress over that is genuine. They really do see themselves as warriors defending what is the way the world has been, apparently, and should, in their mind, continue to be. It's an existential threat. And so that's why we saw with today, The Australian has put forward an editorial, not just from a journalist, but from the newspaper itself, saying we're not going to stop this coverage. And beyond that, there's also a commercial imperative. They're getting the clicks with this kind of content. People are scandalised with the way that these stories are presented as a scandal, and they're going to be able to whip up some fear, and fear equals money.
Ben, you originate from Queensland and you now live in Sydney. So I think you're kind of in quite a good position to offer some insight into what shapes some of the kind of complicated conservative dynamics that seem to exist in some parts of Australia.
Yeah, I do. I mean, Queensland is a complicated state. That's my home state. I'm living in Sydney now, which I think is also a complicated state, and by some metrics, even more conservative than Queensland. You know, you had parts of Western Sydney that had a far more stronger no vote in the same-sex marriage postal survey than most of Queensland on average. So, it's kind of hard to basically make huge generalizations, but you've also got to realize that, you know, for instance, with a state like Queensland, it's one of those rare states where the majority of populations don't really necessarily live in the town and city centres. You know, it's quite a dispersed population. And as a result, you're going to have pretty dispersed views about things like sexuality and gender. But at the same time, you know, you also can't make huge generalisations because in South Australia, it's given us such beautiful politicians like Cory Bernardi. Western Australia is quite conservative in its own and specific ways too. I think Australia is not as fractured as, a country like America is at the moment in terms of, you know, how you identify as left or right. But what I think old school legacy media is finding as a way of survival is making sure that those boundaries and those fractures remain as fractured as possible in order to maintain, you know, a base, a bottom line.
One tactic you've used to try and overcome that is taking money away from The Australian. Do you think that's the best or most effective way to stop that sort of transphobia, or is that just going to sort of cement the fractures that they're trying to perpetuate?
I mean, look, I'm under no illusions. My Twitter followers aren't really going to be the base of people who subscribe to The Australian, right? Like right now, this campaign's been running for, what, maybe just under a fortnight, and we've probably had like a dozen confirmed unsubscriptions. One including an extended family member, I have to say, which was kind of like a personal victory. First of all, it's really hard getting people to change their habits. And second of all, people are often cemented in their views. And thirdly, it's actually practically quite difficult to unsubscribe from a News Corp publication. Like, I tried when I subscribed to The Australian a while back, and, you know, they make you call in person.
You've got to send a carrier pigeon or use Morse code.
Like, you've actually, they own 1/8 of your soul, according to the contract, all that sort of stuff. So that's really difficult. But then again, the Chaser boys, if you go to the Chaser website, they're offering to do it for you for free if you've got a subscription.
Oh, they're good boys, aren't they?
Just getting back to your question, is that the most effective way? No. I mean, The Australian's going to not go anywhere. It's not a newspaper making a huge amount of profit, but Rupert Murdoch and the Murdoch family, they're going to make sure that that paper exists in perpetuity. Yeah. What I think the campaign is hoping to achieve is by drawing attention to this really bad journalism, is to kind of lower it in terms of its estimation from the broader community, from other journalists, from the press. And it's also to raise awareness for grassroots community organisation like the Gender Centre, you know, which is a registered charity because it's a reputable organisation, which is more than you can say for The Australian has become in 2019.
Then there is this sense as well that with some of the contentious issues that are being debated presently, I'm thinking here, for example, the recent debate regarding birth certificate laws that's seen radical feminists and LGBTI activists often engaging in quite challenging debates on Twitter. I guess I wonder whether there are some conversations that really are very challenging to have over social media and whether the medium can perhaps affect the nature of the discourse.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think like all conversations should be confined to an online space. And I think some conversations are actually done better in an online space. I don't think it's an either or proposition. Where I think social media can work is amplifying a message, you know, especially amplifying the voices of vulnerable and marginalized people where they mightn't otherwise be heard. So that's really important. And I think with this conversation that I've been having with The Australian and Bernard Lane, the journalist at The Australian who has been prosecuting the case that there is apparently bad science behind gender dysphoria and people who are transgender, is that there are some things that can't be contested. So the conversations that I've been having with him online, I've been really, really adamant that I don't want it to be about him personally or as a person. I wanted to make it about the flaws in his journalism. And these are things that can be done online because this is a conversation that should be amplified and should welcome other people into it. Science, data, facts and research are things that need to be shared strongly because if they're not being shared in a responsible way or if they're being cherry-picked by other platforms have huge reach, social media is often sometimes the only way to have to have the conversation that needs to contextualise the original debate.
That is a really interesting, as you're saying, some things can't be contested. That's actually really interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way. It reminds me, I had a conversation, I think that's a good way to think about those kinds of debates. It can get tricky in my experience when it comes to engaging with people of faith, though. I found this when I had, again, quite a long conversation, a polite debate with someone from Christian Schools Australia, where we actually, again, you know, went through and unpacked a whole variety of the implications of his kind of positions. But we ultimately bumped into this, you know, we eventually hit this point where he would say, well, this is what I believe, this is my faith, and it's kind of personal. And you can't really contest that. Like, do you find that when you're having debates where something like religion gets involved, by privileging faith as above discussion, do you think that interferes with our ability to solve problems, if you like, or actually kind of have honest conversations about complex issues?
Well, it depends on the conversation that we're actually having. I mean, you know, I've got a lot of time for people of faith, and I've got people of faith in my family, and I think, you know, one of the things that really irritates me online is when people are just saying that all Catholics are bad, when what they really should be talking about are specific arms of the Catholic institution of the church. When it comes to child sex offences, I mean, maybe that's what you're talking about. Maybe you're not just talking about Catholicism and Catholics as a whole, you know what I mean? So that can frustrate me, even though I'm not a person of faith myself. But I think one of the things we need to be clear about is, you know, does freedom of religion, is that going to interfere with our freedom to be not discriminated against? this is a big conversation that's happening in Australia right now. So issues of faith and belief, I think, can't really be challenged and should be respected. But when it interferes with other people's capacity to be able to live lives free of hate, then I think that really warrants attention and nuance rather than a blunt edge. With the case of, like, for instance, trans people, and because I know of a lot of people from the religious right have been very much getting into this kind of trans denialism. That might be up for you to believe, sure, but as I said previously, some things can't be contested, like science, facts, research, and data. So that's not really, a debate even. That might be an opinion, but opinions don't really matter when they don't stack up.
Thank you to Ben Law. And if you don't subscribe to The Australian, and why would you, but still want to support The Gender Centre, you can find them online at thegendercentre.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.